Let's begin. So we left off yesterday. We left off yesterday. Tanya. Tanya. It's 2, 4, 6 lines up from the bottom. Tanya. Tanya. Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Lozer, Bart, Sadduk, Omer. So we'll say, remember again yesterday, we're speaking about the practice that some individuals had to go ahead and hold the lulav throughout davening, even while they're davening. Ultimately, thank you, Baruch Hashem, to ultimately go ahead and hold the lulav throughout the davening as a way of demonstrating an incredible love and commitment towards the mitzvah. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Lazar bar Tzadok Omer, Kach hayom min hagon shel anshei Yerushalayim. This was the custom of the men of Jerusalem. Adam yotzi mi beiso lulav biyado. A person would leave his home, his lulav would be in his hand. He would go to shul, his lulav would be in his hand. He would daven, say kriyashma, or say kriyashma and daven, his lulav would be in his hand. Kore batora vinosias kapov, he would lay duchen. So we'll say, interestingly enough, when laning, and ultimately again when duchening, he would place his lulav down on the ground. Rashi says over here, kore batora tzarech lahaniach halulav. Thank you very much. So when leaning, a person has to go ahead and roll the Torah, close it, then open it. Therefore, a person needs both hands. And therefore, the Baisi put his lulav down. When he says on the floor, the floor doesn't literally mean half on the floor. Just you put it down, you put it down. This is very beautiful. You would go to do Bikur Cholim, Ulinachim Avelim, and to comfort the mourners, lulav biyado. Your lulav is in your hands. So, mamish, everything you were doing, you were going ahead and taking your lulav with you. Nichnas lebeis hamadrish. When you went into the beis hamadrish, meshagir lulavo biado, biad bino ubiad avdo ubiad shlucho. And when you go into the beis hamadrish, you would send home your lulav with your son, with your servant, or with your agent. My kamash malon. What is this whole discussion coming to teach us? Lahodi acha kama hayu zrizin b'mitzvos. It comes to teach us how meticulous the men of yesteryear were with mitzvos, that literally they would go ahead and take their lulav with them at all times. Rabbi Yossi says, if remember again, Rabbi Yossi says that if you accidentally carry your lulav out on Shabbos, that halacha l'maisa, here the lashon was Yom Tov Arishon Shalchag Shechalios B'Shabbos V'Shachach Ba'otzi Es Halulav Yerushas Harab Ben Potter. So according to Yossi, if it's the first day of Yom Tov and you accidentally carried out your lulav into the Rishus Harabim, then what would happen? Potter, you'd be Potter. Why? B'Vnei Shalziyo B'Rishus. Because Yossi, we spoke about the concept that you are preoccupied with a mitzvah, and because you are preoccupied with a mitzvah, then ultimately, again, you are exempt from any potential violations. Says the Gemara. So, last two lines. Amar Abai, tap of Mem Beis Madalev. Abai says the following. So, Amar Abai, lo shanu ela shelo yotzabo. So, Abai says, when do we say that you will not be chayiv for carrying it out? That's when what? That's when lemaisa, you have not yet been yotzei. Because we'll say, if you have not yet been yotzei and now you're carrying out, then technically speaking, you are going to be yotzei with this initial act of carrying. Aval yotzabo, but if you've already been yotzei, chayiv. Because lemaisa, again, you've already been chayiv. So we'll say, when does Rabbi Yossi say that halacha lemaisa, if you accidentally carried it out on Shabbos, on the first day of Yom Tov, that you are pater, that's when you have not yet fulfilled your obligation. So therefore, again, technically speaking, you're preoccupied with the mitzvah. But if you've already gone ahead and fulfilled your obligation, then halacha lemaisa, you would be chayiv for the act of carrying on Shabbos. The Gemara said, but one second. Ha mida'ag bey nafak bey. But one second. But lemaisa, once you lift it up, you are automatically yotzei. So meaning, how can you ever have a situation where you're not yotzei? As soon as you pick up the lulav and esrog, you're yotzei. Amrabai kishahavcho. Oh, where you picked up the esrog upside down. I'll say, like this, remember again, we saw this in the beginning of the Masechta. This, according to Tosfos, and this is how we're able to go ahead and make a bracha on the lulav and esrog over la'asiyah, so prior to the performance of the mitzvah, by lifting up the esrog upside down. Rava Amarava says, afilu teima shelo havcho. Rava says, no, even if you weren't holding the esrog upside down, hakamayaskina, what are we dealing with over here? Kigon shahotzi bikli, shahotzi bikli. where I took out my lulav and esrog in a utensil. I was meaning I'm not holding it directly. I'm holding it in something else. So the Gemara says, excuse me. Yeah, I'm holding it in something else. Baha Rava hu da amar likicha ayedei davar acher shma likicha. I, but Rava is the one who said that almost we had this sugya just last week, that if you take your lulav and esrog, even not directly, but you take it through something else, meaning you hold it in something else, lemaisa, it's still called an act of taking. Harimili derech kovet. That's only true in what? When the way you're taking it ultimately is a demonstration of kovet for the lulav and esrog. Aval derech bizoyon. But if it's considered to be a degradation, it's a bizoyon. Lo. So we'll say again, so therefore halacha lemaisa, what comes out over here, that according to Rabbi Yossi, he's saying like this. If you have not yet fulfilled the mitzvah of lulav and esrog, and you end up carrying it outside, that you're going to be potter. Why? Because technically speaking, since you are preoccupied with the performance of the mitzvah, that exempts you from any kind of chatos obligation. But had you already fulfilled your obligation of lulav and esrog, and then you accidentally carried it outside, then lemaisa what? You would be chayiv for that act of transfer. So now the Gemara is going to question this idea, because Rabbi Yossi is espousing a concept. That's whenever you are preoccupied with the performance of the mitzvah, even if your preoccupation results in a violation, you are not liable for that violation. That's his principle. So the Gemara is going to question it. Amar Rav Huna, Omer Hayu Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi, you say the following thing. Olas ha'ov shenimsa bein agfayim. Rabbi Yossi has an interesting case. If you found a bird ola in the midst of a pile of chatos birds. So you have a ola bird in the midst of chatos bird. Now Rashi points out over here, if you take a look at Rashi just for a moment, Rashi says nira be'inai dehai ben akvayim eino ela loshon ofos olos of shenimsa bein ofos hamelukim lechatos hamifarchesin etel hamizbeach shepamim shehin naasin al keren achas. Well, so here's what's interesting. Remember, an olas ha'of, an ola ultimately is a carbon that is totally consumed. A chatos is a carbon that usually has a portion of consumption for the kohanim. So what's happening over here is you're finding a bird ola that got mixed into the pile of a bird chatos. Let me say that differently. You have a pile of chatos birds, and you have an ola bird that got mixed into that. Now Rashi points out over here, and actually you can take a quick look at it. Rashi says, because sometimes you ended up shechting them in the same corner of the mizbeach. So it could be that you'd have a state of confusion where these birds would get mixed up. So what happened? So Rabbi Yossi said the following. So I accidentally ate an olas ha'of because I thought it was a chatos of. Now remember again, you can't eat an ola because an ola is supposed to totally be consumed. So I made a mistake and ate an ola because I thought it was a chatos. So what's that lacha? Va'achla, potter, and I potter. And I'm putter. So what happened?
It's Sunday.
Putter. So the Gemara says, "My kamash malon." So what are we to learn from this? The ta bidvar mitzvah putter. So we'll say again. So now, it's not such a chiddush that you're putter. Why? Because the truth is, this is in line with what we've saying before. What have we been saying before? That is eight lines out from the top.
Right at the beginning.
Okay. So the Gemara says, what are we learning from here? We're learning from here that ta bidvar mitzvah potter. We will say, what's happening over here? I made a mistake concerning a matter of a mitzvah. Right? That's what happened over here. I thought I was consuming a chatos ha'ov. It turned out that what? I was consuming an olas ha'ov. And the Gemara says that I'm potter. Rabbi says a potter. The Gemara says, hainu hach. It's the same case as before. I mean, this is no different than the lulav case. What's the lulav case? Lulav case is I'm holding my lulav. I'm going to go ahead and discharge my obligation to the fulfillment of lulav, and I'm preoccupied with them. So what do? I walk out from my house into the Shul Rabbim, and what did Rabbi Yossi say there? I'm potter. So what did Rabbi Yossi say over here? I think that I'm eating a chatos. So it turns out that what am I really eating? I'm eating an olas ha'ov. Okay, I'm potter. Same thing. Both are cases of preoccupation with the mitzvah, where I'm preoccupied with the mitzvah. In the course of that, I end up violating a prohibition, and Rabbi Yossi tells me, I'm not chayyeh for that. So why do I have to restate? I'm sorry?
But if he did it on purpose, in other words, he knows he's
walks out with
Oh, so then you're chayiv. You're chayiv.
Chayiv.
Of course, anytime you intentionally violate, anytime.
Even though he was preoccupied with the.
That's not called preoccupation. Preoccupation, by definition, means that you don't realize what you're doing. Once you realize what you're doing, it's no longer preoccupation. So the Gemara says, what would I have thought? When do we say, I might have thought the following. When do we say ta'a bidvar mitzvah pater? Hainu da'avad mitzvah. So you also say, I might have thought the following. When do we say ta'a bidvar mitzvah pater? That's when mamish, in your preoccupied state, you go ahead and what? You end up going ahead and actually performing a mitzvah. So you also say, you see, like in the case of lulav, although I violated Shabbos, what else did I do? I did fulfill mitzvah of netilas lulav. So I might have thought that the concept of preoccupation with the mitzvah exempting me from liability is only in a case of what? Is only in a case where I actually end up fulfilling the mitzvah. However, aval hacha, the tabit var mitzvah, velo avad mitzvah, but I will say in the case of the birds, so what happened? I made a mistake, I was preoccupied with the mitzvah, but what happened in the end? In the end, I actually didn't perform a mitzvah. Why? Because I actively ended up eating the wrong bird. So at the end of the day, I actually did not go ahead and perform any kind of mitzvah. Therefore, I might have thought that because no mitzvah occurred, therefore there should be no exemption at all. Therefore, kamash malan, no. Kamash malan, that Rabbi Yossi even holds that I am exempt when? Even when lemaisa, my act did not result in the actual performance of a mitzvah. Okay, so Gemara raises another kasha. Meisvei, Rabbi Yossi says the following: Hashochet es hatamid shino b'bukar kiel chasal b'shabbes chayiv chatos b'tzarech tamid acher. Rabbi Yossi says, if you shecht a carbon tamid that is not mevukar kiel chasal, what does mevukar kiel chasal mean? Every carbon has to be properly inspected prior to its offering. So what happens? Let's say I went ahead and I offered up. I shechted on Shabbos a tamid that was not properly inspected. I'm chayv achatos for that act of slaughtering. That's non-sacrificial slaughtering on Shabbos. And what? Not only chayv achatos, but what? I need another carbon tamid. So what do you see from here? Now this would appear to be what? At first glance, you would look at this case. What would you assume it is? It seems to be a case of tarba mitzvah, of preoccupation with a mitzvah. Again, I'm trying to check the carbon tamid. It turned out that it was not properly inspected, but nevertheless, I was preoccupied with a mitzvah. I would have thought that therefore any preoccupation with a mitzvah, even if it results in a negative act, I am exempt. And yet, what do we see over here? I'm chayiv. Tush Gemara says, no, amarle bar me'ahi. You can't bring, this case is the exception. Why? Rabbi says, very interesting. Daha itmar Allah. Because it was stated regarding this case, Amrav Shmuel bar Chasoy, Amrav Hamnuna, Saba, Amrav Yitzchak bar Yishon, Amrav Huna, Amrav, Kigon Sheviya, Milishka She'eno Mivukarin. Oh, this case is different, Rabosai. Then what happens? In this case over here, I brought the animal from an uninspected pen. Or, I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah.
From a pen of uninspected. Lishka literally means a chamber. Remember again, Rabosai. Remember we actually learned this, I think probably in Shkalim was one of the first times we saw this, that there was a Lishka where they used to go and keep animals. No, those were not inspected animals. Uninspected animals were not yet inspected animals. So remember again, so the Gemara is saying, in that kind of case, where you are taking an animal from the uninspected pen, Lemaisa, again, that's not even called Tarud B'inyan Mitzvah. Because why? That animal is not even shayach to a karban yet. Because that animal is not even shayach, take a look at Rashi. Milishka she'en levukarin. De'in ze toa bedvar mitzvah. That's not called toa bedvar mitzvah. Shebetlon shebelishka zu. Because the animals in this particular lishka, in this chamber, ain't no tarit she'en on omdin lehakrava. They're not even omid. They're not even really set aside to ultimately be used as sacrificial animals. Lioschara daleim masayakrivu. To go ahead and be worried about them, when are they going to be offered? When are they going to be offered? Why? See, here's the chap. The chap is like this. Under normal circumstances, what is this concept of Torah B'dvar Mitzvah? Torah B'dvar Mitzvah means that a mitzvah requires certain attention. And therefore, a mitzvah by definition brings with it a certain level of preoccupation. What the Gemara now is suggesting is that's only when you have a proper chafza shel mitzvah. You have a proper mitzvah object. But if the object that you are currently dealing with is not even shayich to the mitzvah, I'll give you an example. If you were to go ahead and take a stalk of celery and a lemon, on Sukkot, and you were to say, you know what, Mamish, I don't have a lulav and esrog yet, but you know, this is going to be like my mitzvah of lulav and esrog, and you end up going ahead and walking outside to Rav Muda. Would Rabbi Yossi say that you're potter? No. Why? Because that's not called Torah b'dvar mitzvah. To be Torah b'dvar mitzvah, you need a dvar mitzvah. You need an object that by definition is an objective dvar mitzvah. So therefore, again, the Gemara is suggesting over here is in this case of the Tamid, this animal was never inspected. Because it was never, and it came from the pen of uninspected animals. Because of that what? It's not called dvar mitzvah. And therefore, any mistake that you make with it is just what? It's just a mistake. Granted, okay, it's unintentional. You didn't have in mind to violate Shabbos. That's why you only chay b'chatos and not kares and not skila. But the skila, I should say. But lemaisa, again, it's not called Torah b'dvar mitzvah. So Rabbi say, what comes out from this sugya is that the position of Rabbi Yossi, and I will say, you should know, this is halacha lemaisa, the Rambam paskins this way, that if you are Torah b'dvar mitzvah, if you make a mistake and you violate the halacha because of preoccupation with a mitzvah, you are putter from a carbon chatos. You do not have to bring a chatos. Okay? Says the Mishnah. We'll say new Mishnah. Mekabelas isha miyad b'na miyad b'ayla. Umachzira solamayim. A woman, this is talking about now on Sukkot. So we'll say it's very interesting. What they used to do on Sukkot, I don't know, I've never seen people do this today. Many people do it today. They used to put their lulavim back in water. Not adasim in the Arabas. That goes without saying, but they put the lovin' back in water. I don't know. Has anyone ever seen this? Lovin' in water? Yeah? Okay. Good. Speak to Yehuda for further information on this. Oh, Yekas do it. Interesting.
So I've heard.
Right, yeah. All right, good. So, Mikabelas Isha. All right, but I've never seen the rest of Jewry. All right. So the Mishnah says the following. Mikabelas Isha miyad bina o miyad baila. So what happens? Well, so now what the Mishnah is painting is the following picture. So now the Yom Tov morning is over, and the husband brings home the lulav. So what happens? He can give it to his wife, or a son could give it to his mother, and she could put it back into water on Shabbos. Rabbi Huda says, "B'Shabbos machzirin." You could return the lulav to water on Shabbos. And Rashi points out over here, if you look at Rashi, "Machzir l'mayim shlo yichmosh." In order that the lulav does not dry up. So Shabbos, you could return the lulav to water. Be Yom Tov Mosif. And on Yom Tov, you could add water. Be Moed Machlifin. On Chol HaMoed, you could switch the water. Katan Hayodeh L'Na'aneha. Similarly, if you have a katan who knows how to shake the lulav, Chayiv Belulav. He becomes Chayiv Belulav. So we'll say, obviously, this Chayiv over here is talking about what? It's talking about Mitzvah Chinuch. So a child who's able to go out and do the na'anuim is chayiv at this midrabanan for this mitzvah of chinuch. If you take a quick look at Rashi, Rashi says over here the following. Rashi says, "Rishabis machzirin shahri mikan natlum hayom," because you took the lulav from there today. Avalomo sifin mayim, but you can't add water on Shabbos. Kol shekein shei machlivin, you certainly can't switch the water. Lishpocha say lo v'lasei zachem tzonein mahani detarach l'takun iman. Rabbi said the reason for that is because the following: to go ahead and switch the water, or for that matter, to add water, would look like you're trying to fix an object, and therefore lemaisa again you can't do it. So why can you return it to the water? Rashi's words are very important because Rashi says that since the lulav came from the water this morning, it was in there already, presumably in the morning. Taking it out and returning it is not called an act of fixing, but any change in the water, either adding additional water or changing the water, that indeed would be problematic. But Moed Machlif, and Rashi says, B'cholo Shavod Mitzvah Lahachlif. So in Chol HaMoed, it's not just that you can switch the water, but what? You have to switch the water. No, I'm sorry. Not you have to switch the water. It's a mitzvah to go ahead and switch the water. So says the Gemara Pshita. So we'll say, the Mishnah begins with a very interesting halacha, that a husband could go ahead, and so I come home from shul, I could give my wife my lulav to put in the water. So the Gemara says, shkoyach, right? What, I don't understand, what's the chiddush over here? This is very interesting. Now the thing, what would I have thought? Horil v'isha la bas chiyuvahu, since a woman is not obligated in lulav, why is a woman not obligated in lulav? It's a mitzvah asei shazman, a time-bound commandment. I might have thought that since she's not obligated, therefore what? Ema lo sikabel. Maybe she should what? Maybe she should not be able to receive it from her husband. Why not? Look at Rashi, Emalo, Dilagabo, Ika Isser Tiltal. So Rashi says, the Havamina is what? Maybe for her it's what? Mukta. So fascinating. Maybe for her, since she's not obligated to take it, so then maybe for her, the mindset's Mukta. Therefore, again, Kamash Malon, no. Kamashon, that is not the case. Rashi says, Kamash Malon. This is very, Rabbi says, this is very interesting. I mean, the rest has just been interesting. This is very interesting. Kamash Malon. Kevan deroi l'netilas anoshim. Since, again, men are obligated in it. Toras kli alav. It has the status of a utensil. Umutar betiltul l'kol. And everyone is permitted to carry. So also what the Gemara seems to be saying is the following, that almost like the object, the lulav itself takes on, once it's permitted, once somebody's using it, it takes on an objective identity as a permitted utensil, and therefore lemaisa again is permitted even to be carried by the woman. Okay, katan hayodeh lena'aneh. If a young child knows how to shake the lulav, so he should shake the lulav. We'll say it's a very interesting sugya now about katan. Tan rabbanan, katan hayodeh lena'aneh chayiv belulav. So if a katan knows how to shake the lulav, he should take lulav. Lis atef, if he knows how to go ahead, literally to wrap himself, talking about tzitzis, then he should chayiv tzitzis. He should put on tzitzis. Lishmor tefillin, Rabbi says, is very interesting as well. If he knows how to go ahead and watch over his tefillin. So look at Rashi. Lishmor tefillin. Shelo yichnos bahen lebeis hakise. It's very interesting. He knows not to take them into the bathroom. So he knows how to safeguard the sanctity of the tefillin. Then what? So lo keach lo aviv lo keach lo tefillin. I will say it's very interesting. You should know, technically speaking, and it's clear from the Gemara, tefillin really has nothing to do with, not nothing, but it's not fully related to bar mitzvah. Right? Meaning, it's obviously it becomes related at bar mitzvah because once you become a bar mitzvah, you are obligated in tefillin. But technically speaking, what the Gemara is saying over here is that if a child knows how to watch over the tefillin, the Gemara also says in Maseches Brachos that if the child knows how to keep a clean body, because remember again, tefillin requires guf naki. Child knows how to maintain a clean body. That halacha l'maisa, the father is obligated to buy him tefillin even at a younger age. Okay, we're not knowing that way because we have a general concern that the child might not know how to properly keep a clean body, how to properly watch over the tefillin, and therefore l'maisa, we wait till bar mitzvah. Right, your yodei l'daber, once he knows how to speak, oh, this is so beautiful. Aviv lomdo Torah. The moment that your child knows how to speak, the first thing you teach him is not the ABCs. The first thing you teach him is Torah. Ukriyashma. And Kriyashma, Torah mahi. What's the first? What does it mean that when your child begins to speak, the first thing you teach them is Torah? Amrav Hamnuna, Torah tziva lanu Moshe, Morasha kihilas Yaakov. The first thing I teach my child is that first of all, Moshe Rabbeinu gave us the Torah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Morasha kihilas Yaakov. And ultimately, it's a morasha, it's an inheritance, it's a portion for all of Klal Yisrael. Kriya Shema Mahi, what does it mean when I teach my child Kriya Shema? Pasuk Rishon, that refers to what? That refers to the first pasuk of Kriya Shema. Hayodia Lishmar Gufo, a child who knows how to keep his body clean. Ochlin Al Gufo Taros, we go ahead and literally, we eat taros that came in contact with his body. Look at Rashi. Rashi says, so a child who is familiar enough with the laws of Tumah, that he knows about how to avoid Tumas Mago, which means direct contact with something Tameh, Masa, carrying something Tameh, or Ohel, or being under the same roof with something Tameh. Oh, I'm reading Rashi, Ochlen Agufo Taros, In Naga Gufo Betaros, In Choshishin Lohem. So we'll say if his body came in touch, came in contact, with food that is supposed to be consumed ritually, in a ritually pure fashion. Halacha l'maaseh, we don't assume that contact with his body in any way compromises the sanctity or the purity of the food. Lishmor es yadav, if he knows how to keep his hands, because I both said it's very interesting. So apparently, in the maturation of a child has at first a greater awareness of how to keep his body out of contact with tumah than he does his hands. Because again, it also, the hands, the Gemara says, Yadayim askanios hein. Right? The hands wander. So because the hands wander, again, it's much easier to contract tuma with the hands. Granted, it's a rabbinic tuma, but tuma nevertheless. But once he knows how to go ahead and keep his hands ritually pure, Ochlin al yodo taros. Then we may even go ahead and eat sacrificial, or I should say, taros. Taros doesn't have to be sacrificial items. Taros goes to be chumos and maestros that he touched. Hayodeh lishoel. If a child is old enough to be asked, and I will say what that means is, he's old enough to be asked if he came in contact with something that was tummy. So you could ask him a question, and he could answer you. So the Gemara says, Birshus Hayachid, so we'll say, now this is talking about a Suffolk case. Let's say again, I think the child may have come into contact with a tummy item. And what? So he's old enough now that I could ask him and he could answer, he understands, he asked the question. But now he's not sure, it's a Suffolk. So if the Suffolk occurs in Rishus Hayachid, meaning there's a Suffolk about Tumah in a private domain, Sfeiko Tummy. Then such a Suffolk, the way we rule on it is Tummy. Birshus Harabim, but if the Suffolk Tumah came up in Rishus Harabim, Sfeiko Tahor. Then Aloch Lamai said the Suffolk is Tummy. I'll say, this has nothing to do with Katan. This is the din of Suffolk Tumah. We learn out, Rashi actually points out, we learn out from Sota, that any Suffolk Birshus Hayachid is Tummy, and any Suffolk Birshus Harabim is Tahor. So what the Gemara is just saying over here is that if the child is old enough to be able to understand things and answer questions in a coherent fashion, I mean, as much as children answer questions in coherent fashion, this child is able to go ahead and do so. So he's treated just like an adult in terms of Suffolk Tumah. Suffolk Tumah Birshus Harabim will be Tahor. Suffolk Tumah Birshus Hayachid will be Tomei. Hayodeya. Lifros Kapov, if now this amount of child who's a Kohen, if a child who's a Kohen knows how to duchen, so what is the halacha? Cholkin lo truma bebeis hagranos. We go ahead and we give him his truma portion in the greenery. Now, this is very important. Look at Rashi. Cholkin lo truma bebeis hagranos. Umekamehaki, before this state where he actually knows how to duchen, ain cholkin lo begorin. We do not go ahead and give him. We do not give him his portion of the truma in the granary. Avam mishagrin lo lebeiso. We send it to his house. If you know the shomer b'tara, if he knows how to eat in ritual purity, the hachi tanya b'gimara. The no sin ala. So also, I'll say this outside. It's like this. The issue is that with a young child, we don't like to dispense to him a truma. In a public fashion, because the concern that people will see, oh, such a young child, he doesn't know how to properly go ahead and safeguard the purity of the truma, and therefore people will come to be lax with truma. So what we normally do for a child is we send the portion to his home, because the child is a kohen, is permitted to eat truma as well. Once a child is old enough that he knows how to duchen, so first of all, again, he's already established a little bit more in the eyes of the community that he's reached the age of responsibility. Therefore, even if he shows up at the granary, you can give him his portion of truma right there. Amabez. If a child knows how to shecht, so what's that halacha? Ochlin mishchita, so you can eat from mishchita. Yeah, try this one today. Not gonna work, right? You can eat from mishchita. Amar Rav Huna v'hu shegadol omid al gabav. So Rav Huna qualifies this and says yes, but you need a mashkiach, right? It's meaning we're not gonna trust the child on his own. We trust his skill if he demonstrates the skill, but there still must be an adult overseer. Yochol le'echol kizayis dogon. Once a child knows how to eat a kizayis of grain, marchikin mitzoaso u'mene ragbav. We have to distance ourselves from his excrement or from his urine. Dalid amos. In terms of davening and kriyashon amos, and the reason for that is the following: the Gemara makes an assumption that essentially what this is saying is a child who eats solid foods. So a child who eats solid foods, apparently the Gemara feels that their waste has a stronger smell than before a child begins to eat solids. So therefore, again, once you go ahead and a child begins to eat solids, solid is defined as dagon. So you have to distance yourself from his urine, from his excrement, dalet amos, for tfila purposes. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Chista, v'hu sheyachol lo'ochlo b'chdei achilas pras. So Rav Chista says, but that's assuming what? That's assuming that he's able not just to eat grain, but that he's able to eat the grain, b'chdei achilas pras, which means what, Rabosai? Within a limited amount of time. Okay, how long is that? K'dei achilas pras? 3 minutes, 9 minutes, 12 minutes, okay, whatever it is. It's not really very important for our purposes today. Amar Rav Chiya b'reid Rav Yeva, u'begadol afa pi she'eno yachol le'echol b'chdei achilas pras. But for a gadol, for an adult, even if he doesn't eat the grain, b'chdei achilas pras, you still have to distance yourself from his waist. Dalet amos. Why? D'chsev. The Yosef Das, Yosef Machov. It's a very interesting application here. This is from Koheles. Literally translated, it means that the more knowledge you have, the more pain you have. So Shlomo Melech is saying that very often, the wiser we are, the more difficult, the more pain that wisdom often brings us. The Gemara is using it as a different application over here. Literally, that the older you are, Yosef Machov, the more painful the stench of one's waste is. Okay? So I'm taking a little bit of literary liberty with the Pasuk, but okay. Yochol le'achol kizayis tzli. If the child is able to go ahead and eat a kizayis of roasted meat, shochtin alaves ha-pesach. We go ahead and we shech the Pesach for such a child. Meaning, I will say, essentially, once the child is able to partake of Karban Pesach, so we let the child be part of Karban Pesach. Shneimar ish lefi achlo, because we see what? That the criteria for being part of Karban Pesach is what Rabbi said, the ability to eat. Rabbi Huda says, Ad shiyachol avarer achilo. So Rabbi Huda says, Rabbi says something very interesting, that when does a child get to take part in the Karban Pesach? When he's able to go ahead and be mevara, when he's able to select food, meaning that he's able to understand that food is of value, and he actively selects food over something else. Kate said, so how do you tell if a child selects food? So Gemara says, simple. Nostin lot tsurar v'zog, bro. If you give him a pebble and he throws it, egos v'notlo, but a nut and he eats it. So according to Yehuda, once the child reaches the age where he understands that food is of value, then the mice at that point in time, you'd be permitted to go ahead and include in the Shiv Karban Pesach as well. Hadrun Alach Lulav Hagos. Mazel tov. Okay, next parak. Next parak. Lulav V'arava. Now we'll say, now we're going to, oh, three. Lulav V'arava. Shisha V'shiva. The mitzvah of lulav and the mitzvah of arava. If you look at Rashi, Rashi says, "Shein b'mikdash kol shiva lulav l'metila v'arava l'hakit mizbeach." So we will see later on that there was an idea that the Beis HaMikdash, they didn't just take the lulav and the esrog, but rather they also took aravas. And what did they do with the aravas? They circled the mizbeach with the aravos. So the Mishnah is saying over here the following. There are times when you take the lulav and esrog for 6 days, and there are times when you take the lulav and esrog for 7 days. We'll see when. Ha-halel v'ha-simcha, shmona, halel, which literally means the recitation of halel. Simcha rabosai means eating meat, consumption of meat. That applies all 8 days of Yom Tov. Sukkah, remember again, including Shmini Atzeres. Sukkah v'nisuch ha-mayim. Sitting in the sukkah and the water libations, shiva, occur all 7 days of Yom Tov. Hacholil chamisha. The cholil Rabbi say, if you take a look at Rashi, he says over here, hacholil simchas beis hashoeva. We'll see this as well. Chalil literally means like a flute. So the chalil, simchas beis hashoeva, how you smechim bechag lekavod sheivas niso chamayim, u'mechalim bechalilim mikinoros va'osa cholil eino doche Yom Tov. Hilchah pamim shi. All right, so let's read Rashi. I'm sorry, let's read the Gemara. So with the chalil, with the flute, chamisha v'shisha. Sometimes we used it for 5 days. Sometimes we used it for 6 days. Lulav shiva. So now the Gemara is going to. So now the Mishnah is going to go through each of these cases. So the Gemara says the following. Okay, first of all, take a quick look at Rashi just by chalil again. Rashi says, "Ba'osa chalil inon dochi yom tov." That chalil is not dochi yom tov. Hilchah pamim shu chamisha yamim. Essentially, the chalil was not doche Shabbos in Yom Tov. So you would not play the flute either on Shabbos. So sometimes you played the flute over the course of Yom Tov for 5 days. That was when Shabbos and the first day of Yom Tov did not coincide. So let's say you'd have Shabbos and Yom Tov, 2 days you wouldn't, that only leaves you five. And sometimes you'd blow it 6 days, that would be when Shabbos and Yom Tov did in fact coincide. So the Gemara says the following, the Mishnah says, Lulav Shiva Ketzad. What's the case of when you would go ahead and shake the Lulav for 7 days? That would be Yom Tov HaRishon Shal Chag, Shechalios B'Shabbos. That's the case where Rabbi said the first day of Yom Tov falls out on Shabbos. So if the fall, remember again, we've already seen that when the first day of Yom Tov falls out on Shabbos, Yom Rishon, which is the Doraisa day, they would take the lulav in the Beis HaMikdash. So that would be a case where you would end up taking the lulav all 7 days. However, Shechalios B'Shabbos, lulav Shiva, Ushar Kol HaYomim Shisha. And if the first day of Yom Tov falls out on any other day, then what? Then what? Then Lamaisi, you only take the lulav for 6 days. Why, Rabbi Osai? Because when one of the days of Sukkot falls out on Shabbos, if it's any other day than the first, we don't take the lulav on Shabbos. The only time you take the lulav on Shabbos, even in the Beis Hamikdash, is when? When it's the first day. Any other day of Sukkot that falls out on Shabbos, you do not go ahead and take the lulav. So again, if first day of Sukkot falls out on Shabbos, then you take the lulav for what? For 7 days. Any other day, only six. Arava shiva kitzot. So what's the case of Arava for 7 days? Yom ha-shvi'i shal Arava shechal yos pshas. And I will say, it's just the opposite for the Arava. For the Arava, the big day is what? It's what we call Hoshana Rabbah, is the seventh day. So if the seventh day of Sukkot falls out on Shabbos, you take the Arava even on Shabbos. Arava Shiva. Ushar kol yomim, but again, if Shabbos falls out on any other day of Sukkot, then what? Shisha. Then you only take the Arava for 6 days. Mitzvahs lulav ketzad. I will say, what's the case? Or how did it turn out? How did it look when the first day of Yom Tov fell out on Shabbos? So Yom Tov Arishon Shal Chag Shechal Yos B'Shabbos. If the first day of Sukkot fell out on Shabbos, what do people do? Molichin as well. Ben Harabai is, we'll say, so beautiful to think about. Everybody on Erev Shabbos, everybody brought their lulavim to the Harabai, to the Temple Mount. V'achazonin mekablin mehen. The chazanim were like the gaboim. The gaboim would take everybody's lulav. V'sojrin also agabeya itztava. And they would arrange it on benches on the harabais. The elders would place their lulavim in a different chamber. We'll see why, Rabbi Osai, because there was a lot of pushing, a lot of shoving. The next day, the zakenim did not want to be involved in the pushing and shoving, so they kind of put their lulavim in a srogim somewhere else. And what happened? And we teach the people to say, Komisha magia lulavi lulavi liado. Hari hulo b'matara. So you want to say, here was the issues. Everybody brought the lulav and asked, what's the problem? Chances are, you're not going to, you might have a very difficult time locating your own lulav and esrog tomorrow. So what happened? What did they condition people to do? Essentially, what they said is, whatever lulav you pick up, you should use. If it happens to be your lulav, great. If it's not the lulav you brought, they taught the people to say, whoever gets my lulav, it's theirs. Essentially, again, I will say, it's like a brera type of situation. A matana, so you're going to give me your lulav, I'm going to give me my lulav, because chances are we're not going to find the ones that we actually brought on Erev Shabbos. Fine. Remember, this is necessary because on the first day, you must what? You must have lochem. You must have lochem. So the Gemara goes vayta. Lemachar, the next day, mashkim, and everybody would get up early, uboin, and they'd come to the harabais, v'chazonin zorkin osam lifmehem. And what happens? It sounds like it's literally translated over here that the Zakenim would get up and they would mamish. They would just like they would throw it out. Now it can't literally mean that they threw it out. What it means is they gave it out. And what happened? V'heim mechatfin umakin ishes chavera. What happened? It mamish. It wasn't pretty. Like they're hitting and pushing and shoving. Not chas v'shalom with malice or with anger. But you know how Jews get. Baruch Hashem, we're fantastic people. Like the Kiddush, right? Oh, so what happens? At least this is for a mitzvah, not a piece of kichel. But all right, right? But they're pushing and they're moving and they're hitting and they're this. And what happened? So ad shebo li de sakana. Until some remember, we'll say, this, there is a sakana. What's the sakana over here? Truth is, the sakana is really a sakana of stampede over here. You have an remember this zalil regal. You have a huge amount of people. Chas v'shalom, it could very easily turn into a real significant sakanas nafashos. Therefore, hiskinu sheyehekol echad ve'echad notel b'beiso. So what happened? The rabbis instituted that halacha l'maisa, everyone should stop bringing their lulav to the harabais, and everyone should bench lulav and esrog at home. This was done, again, in order to avoid any type of sakana that results from these situations where everyone is trying to bench lulav and esrog on the harabais. All right, then we'll stop over here. Pick up with the Gemara tomorrow, Mir Tasha. How did they store it?
They took the lulavs and put them on the benches.
Same thing with the esrog. All together.